Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson, and this is episode 223. And our guest on the show today is Tanya. Tanya is from the South Coast in England, and she has brought a very short and very interesting dream, which you are about to hear. Now, as you know, the idea with The Dream Show is that you put up your hand if you want to volunteer to be a guest on the show. Well, you don't actually put up your hand. You go to janetheresa.com, you go to podcast, you go to the drop-down box, and there's a form to fill in there if you'd like to be a guest on The Dream Show. But anyway, we set everything up, but the only thing that I don't know is the dream that the dreamer is going to bring. So the moment we start recording, as you'll hear, Tanya brings up a dream, and as you hear it for the first time, I'm hearing it for the first time too. So as you listen to the dream being interpreted, you pick up the tools and techniques for interpreting a dream, and you explore it at the same time as I do. Now, I know all this because we've just finished recording it, and I'm now putting the beginning of the show on. And as you'll discover when you listen in, Tanya has done the first of our dream courses, How to Interpret Your Dream Step by Step. And she comes on and basically says, this is one dream where I did get a little bit stuck. So you'll hear her mention techniques that she has discovered by doing the course, and you'll hear how we pick up on the little bits that she's missed and really put it all together. So I think you're going to enjoy this. Before we go there, just a reminder again of the website, janetheresa.com, that's Teresa without an H, or dream-academy-online.com if you're interested in doing the courses. Now let's get on with Tanya. Welcome to The Dream Show, Tanya.
Thank you.
And you're in the UK on the South Coast, which means that although this is quite late in the day for us here in Tasmania, you may still be in bed.
I am. With my cat on my lap.
Which is, you know, could you have a much better setting, really, for doing a dream show, I ask you?
No, it's really good. I've had my coffee. I've got a little candle on because it's just getting light now. So it's perfect.
Oh, that's absolutely beautiful. Okay, well, hit me with your dream.
Right, it's a very short dream, but I know, having listened to your podcast, that short dreams can be full of information. So in this dream, I'm walking along a road. I'd say it is a run-down road or alleyway, not quite clear. I think there's some barrels lying around, that kind of setting. And I notice this very thin thread of smoke, and so I'm sort of looking at it, and then I notice a cat sitting on a barrel, I think, and it's a very manky cat. It's grey and it's got scabs all over it. It's in a bad way. It's a stray, and it has its eyes are all gunged up, and it can't see because of it. And I feel really sorry for this cat, and I start talking to it, and I say, "Oh, sweetheart," and it's kind of looking towards me, but trying to open its eyes, but can't. And I just feel my heart goes out to this cat. And I just want to take it home and care for it and take it in and give it a home. But then I think, no, Poppy, that's my cat in my real life, she just wouldn't accept that. So I just, that's the end of the dream.
Mm. So,
see what I mean? It's short.
It's short and sweet, and I love it. And we will get plenty out of it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So at the end of the dream, did you feel comfortable with your decision, or did you still feel a bit sad about the stray cat?
I just felt sad because I just really wanted to help this, put the cat out of its suffering, you know. I just knew I couldn't, because if I brought it home, then all hell would break loose. So it wouldn't work.
Just because that's the nature of cats, or because it's something specific about Poppy?
I think it's, well, you know, I see cats who are very loving towards each other, but unfortunately my cat isn't like that. We have a neighbour's cat who's gorgeous, Tommy, and she just terrorises him. He's terrified of her. Yeah. So, you know, and he's not in our house. So, so that's what I mean.
So it's as if your decision about Poppy in the dream would be in character with Poppy?
Yes, definitely.
Mm. So yeah. my feeling.
No, I have. say, in real life, I wouldn't want another cat. You know, in real life, I wouldn't want two cats.
Yes.
I'm quite happy with one cat.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, so the stray cat's definitely symbolic. I would say the end of the dream, it's possible that your more conscious mind was coming in and, you know, thinking, oh, yeah, that wouldn't work with Poppy. So I think that bottom line of the dream was just your conscious decision-making coming in. So it's really down to, the dream is down to, you know, what is the cat? What is the stray cat? What is it that you'd love to take home and care for? And we're going to go down that track. But I guess the first thing that struck me is the barrels. You know, you noticed the barrels and the cat was on a barrel. Talk to me a little bit more about the barrels.
Because I was thinking about that. I was trying to remember what was the setting exactly. And was it, I don't think it was dark, but it felt like a dark place because it was all run down. And I think there were sort of empty barrels. And then at a later point, I suddenly remembered the thin thread of smoke. You know, I thought, oh, I don't know what that is, because, you know, the cat wasn't on fire. It wasn't like somebody was trying to burn the cat, but there was smoke there.
So you couldn't work out where the smoke was coming from?
No, and as soon as I saw the cat, I lost interest in the smoke. It was the smoke that drew me to the cat, because I was looking at the smoke, and then I noticed the cat on what I think was the barrel.
All right, okay. So were the barrels, like, what would have been in the barrels before? The barrel was empty. What would they have been made to hold usually?
I don't know. Oil? I don't know. I don't really know.
Oil is the first thing.
They were big barrels. It wasn't like they were, you know, beer barrels, barrels of beer. Oil drums, you know, that's
yes,
the word, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah.
So what do you use oil for? I mean, these were empty, but what would you normally use oil for, the kind of oil that comes in drums?
Well, the oil that comes in drums, I guess, is for cars, isn't it? I don't know. Or if it's, well, they wouldn't have olive oil in them, I don't think. I don't know. I kind of associate it more with fueling transport, you know.
No, that's good. Yeah. So fuel, we've got fuel there. Because what we're doing here, of course, is it's not my association with barrels and what barrels mean to you. I'm trying to get from you, you know, what kind of barrels, how do you see barrels, what might the barrels have contained? Because this is your dream and your symbols and they're all personal to you. So we start the dream with a rundown road, and it might even be an alley, not a road, but an alley itself. And it's felt dark and it felt run down. And the opening of a dream often states the issue that the dream is addressing. And dreams, of course, are generally processing your conscious and unconscious experiences of the 1 to 2 days beforehand. So the dream is basically opening with saying, I am either feeling quite run down, and I may be very aware of this, or it may be a deep unconscious thing. I'm either feeling really run down, or I'm concerned or worried about being run down. But nevertheless, the theme of this dream is something about being a bit run down. Now, the road is also a bit in the dark. So being in the dark could also reflect that consciously you may not feel so run down, but in the dark, you know, in your unconscious mind, feeling a bit run down here. So would you say, how long ago was the dream, Tanya?
I had it on the 22nd of September, so that was a Sunday morning when I had the dream, yeah.
Right, so you'd be looking at the Friday and Saturday before then. So sort of looking back to that time, did you feel at all run down, or did you feel you might be on the verge of being run down then?
Not really. I knew I would be going away because I've just been away for 5 days, and I thought it would be nice to have a break. But when I was, because I've done this course with you, you know, I know that the cat, the monkey cat, is me, obviously.
Yes.
and I was thinking, okay, so what's this about? And there were sort of two things that came up, right? So the day before. That sort of addressed an issue that I have do have in my life, and I'm perfectly aware of that, and that's the fact that I've been on my own for a while, you know, and yes. it bothers me. And a friend of mine has recently moved in to my house with me, and she's sort of like a flatmate, and we had both been away for a couple of days, and we were meeting up again in the kitchen and having a chat, and she was telling me about a guy she'd met, and, you know, she didn't know if anything was going to come of it, and I just suddenly felt so jealous, you know. Mm. But I did vocalize it. I said, oh, it's not fair. You know, you've met someone. I want to meet someone. So I was quite upfront about it. Mm. So that's one thing. But also, a few days before, so this is the other thing, I realized this isn't directly to do with myself, but there was a homeless man in the road where I work, and he had been lying on the steps of a building for days, and he hadn't been sitting up like most of them do, you know, trying to get money so mm-hmm. that they can get what they want. He was just lying there, and I was just becoming more and more aware of him each day, thinking, he's still lying there, he's not moving, is he okay? And then I noticed he had his head resting on a bag of hard things, you know, his belongings. And I thought of a pillow that I have in my attic that's just lying there, and I thought, I'm going to give him that pillow, you know. At least I can't really solve his situation, but I can give him something soft to put his head on. Mm. So I took the pillow in the next day and gave it to him. And then the following day, one of my colleagues came into work and said, oh, he's just been picked up by the social services. They've taken him away in a taxi. But, you know, my heart really went out to this guy, because I was thinking of phoning someone, police or someone about him, because I thought, you know, I think maybe he's dying.
Yes.
You know? So, or he, you know, because he just wasn't doing anything at all. And I just felt very sad seeing him, as I always do when I see homeless people, because there's so many now in this mm-hmm. country and all over the place. So that kind of tied up, do you see what I mean, with the stray cat?
Absolutely.
But it's not so personal to my situation, but it does bring up those emotions of feeling like I felt for the cat. My heart went out to the cat, and I was concerned for this homeless man.
Yes, yeah, exactly the same. You know, as you say, my heart went out to him. I think you probably find that both are relevant, and we'll go through them. But let's do the homeless one first.
But I wasn't prepared to take him home. You know, I
no.
was like, oh, I've got to take this man home and have him in my home. I didn't want to, but I gave him the pillow just to.
You gave him something from home. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more likely to be the first one, and we'll go through that. But let's deal with the homeless man first, simply because, as you said, Tanya, you had the same feeling of, oh, my heart went out to him, and my heart went out to the cat in the dream. So you've got that connection of something or someone your heart is going out to. Mm. You know, and it was a beautiful thing you did, taking the pillow in. And we would not all take the pillow in. That was something special that you did, and something amazing and wonderful and empathetic that you did. But I guess most of us would notice the homeless man, and it would play on our minds, and what can we do, and oh, this is so sad or whatever. But whenever we really focus on something like that, particularly something so emotional and heart-pulling, it will kind of move around our own emotions and mind and body, and see if there's a resonance within us at some level. So, you know, whether or not you've ever worried about being homeless, or whatever feelings you have about your home, it's possible that the thought of him resonated with some part of yourself that may or may not have a fear of, what if I lose my home one day? You know, there but for the grace of God go all of us, but what if I lose my home one day? You know, what do I have to do to keep my home? What if one day I turn out like him? And, you know, what if one day there's no one to care for me? And you say, for example, that although you've got a friend living with you as a housemate at the moment, you are actually living on your own and have been for a while. And these things can therefore play on our minds. So it's possible that at some level there's an aspect of yourself that you project ahead and think, well, there could be part of myself that might be homeless one day, and how would I deal with that? How would I feel about that?
I have to say, my home could be destroyed, but I'm very fortunate. I don't have a mortgage, so I'm very fortunate. So So I feel very secure in that sense that I do have my own home, and the chances of losing it, hopefully, are slim. But I do have feelings of anger towards our society that we have homeless people. There's so much money kicking around that this shouldn't happen. Mm. We shouldn't have. It's a reflection on us as a society that we have homeless people, and it's not good. And I think it should be way at the top of what the country wants to address, not fast broadband. I think we should get everyone off the streets. Everyone should have a home.
Yeah.
And it's a wider thing here. Mm. So that in itself, I don't fear losing my home, but I just feel for people who don't have a home.
And what you're also saying is you're fearing for society in general, that such a large proportion of people are homeless. Yeah.
It's not just in this country. In the developed world, we should not have homeless people. Mm. That's a fact, I think.
Mm. Well, the dream could certainly be exploring all of that. And let's look at the other one too, the feeling of potential jealousy, which you resolve by getting it out there. there was a feeling there of... take us through that one again.
Which bit?
The jealousy.
Talked to my friend. So she had been to a funeral, and then she'd had this encounter with a guy, and, they were just sort of having a nice encounter, and there was a possibility that she might see him again. So I just thought, oh, that would be so nice just to have that feeling again of meeting someone and where there's a mutual liking and that excitement, So I was jealous of that.
Mm.
Yes.
I'm wondering, you dealt with it beautifully and bringing it out there and being aware of it basically nips it in the bud. But I'm kind of thinking, the thin thread of smoke in the dream, where there's smoke, there's fire.
That's right.
Or the thing that, as in the dream, it was the smoke that drew your attention to the cat. So smoke is like an indicator of a fire or an indicator of there's something happening. And once in the dream you'd seen the smoke and you'd got onto the cat, you forgot about the smoke. So I'm wondering whether the issue over the sort of realising that you were a little bit jealous, that you perhaps like to have a bit of a relationship going now, whether that was like smoke. It was like, I didn't really realise I felt as deeply as this until... She told me that she met this guy at a funeral.
I know.
And this smoke has sort of maybe indicated, it's a small sign. I realised that within myself, there's maybe only been smoke that I've recognised up to now, but actually there's fire here. I'm wishing more for a relationship or long-term, short-term, for the night, whatever, that I'm realising this goes deeper than I had previously noticed.
Mm. Yeah, well, I'm just kind of aware of it all the time, but, I think, I function perfectly well on my own. I'm not a lost soul. But there are moments where I'm suddenly aware of what I'm missing out on in a relationship. But there are other times that I think, oh, God, the bad sides of a relationship, And I think, oh, my God, no, I don't want all that, But then there are moments where, like this encounter where there's that sort of nice little buzz and that excitement, that those are the good things, and I think, oh, yeah, that's what I'm really missing. Mm. Yeah.
That could be a fire that could be interesting for you and give you a bit of passion and...
Yeah, some years ago I did feel a lot of passion for someone, but it never materialised into anything. And I can remember thinking at the time, because it was so strong, I thought, I never want to feel this again. I never, ever want to feel like this again. But maybe now I'm thinking, well, maybe I do.
Yes.
even it means having some pain. But except this time round, I would like it to become something rather than just raging out of control but not having any outlet.
Yes. So that's really all very on point that you're saying there, Tanya, you know, because if you think of the barrels, you saw them as empty barrels and you thought that they may have contained oil before that. And Yes, and you I asked you what the oil would be used for, and you said, well, probably for fueling, for fuel, to get things moving, to get transport moving. Yeah, and interesting also that you said, oh, I don't think it's olive oil. And I'm thinking, oh, well, you know, there could have been a range of things, but olive oil we would generally use for cooking and for our health, for nourishment. Yeah. But you really basically saw it as a fuel, So the barrels were empty of the fuel was running out. And as you just said, you know, you did have passion some time ago in that other relationship that you had, and that passion, you know, we see.
No,
passion.
I didn't have a relationship. That was the whole thing. It never became a relationship.
But you had passion within you for what could have become the relationship.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was so strong. I thought, I just can't. I just don't want this anymore.
Can't do this. So you had a burning desire that didn't come to anything.
That's right.
Fizzled into a thread of smoke, perhaps.
Yeah. Okay.
So
I knew you'd find something that I couldn't find. Yeah, that's really interesting about the oil drums. Yeah, really interesting.
So also because you made the decision when you had all that passion and it wasn't going to go anywhere, and you made the decision that I'm never going to feel this again because I don't want to be in this situation, you kind of emptied your barrel then. You emptied it of the fuel.
Yeah, but you see, now I'm thinking, oh, my God, next year I'm going to be 60, and then it's just downward, downward slope. And, I just want to have one last bit of passion again before I become old and decrepit and manky. And
okay, so for all of you listening out there who are 70 and 80 and 90...
Oh, God, yeah.
I love it. So, look, you used the word manky there too, and you described the cat as manky.
The cat was really manky. It was a grey cat and very manky.
So grey and manky, and you've just said that, you know, you don't want to, you want one last fire of passion maybe before you become old, grey and manky. You used the word manky, so you definitely related it to the cat there. So that cat, so far, from what you're saying, sounds like... the part of what you envisage your older age to be like. Like at the moment, you're totally dynamic. You're not even 60, you're just 60, and you're feeling absolutely fantastic. But you're projecting ahead and imagining that when you're 70, 80, 90, you're going to be grey and manky like the cat.
Yeah, right.
And life may surprise you when you get there.
Yeah, who knows? But like there's also... The eyes all gunged up, so there's something I don't want to see.
Absolutely, yeah. So, if we backtrack slightly, you know, you made a kind of deal with yourself a few years ago that you wouldn't let yourself feel that passion again because you don't want to go there. So you emptied your barrels, you gave all that away, but now you're realizing that actually, even if it's just for once. Because I've just witnessed what my new flatmate is potentially getting, I want some of that. So it's then that your dreaming mind would say, well, you know, you've got the barrels, they're empty. And Tanya, maybe the rundown road or the rundown alley then is your unconscious mind saying, yeah, I know you're living a good life. I know you've got your mortgage paid off. I know that, you know, you're obviously healthy and well and all of these things. But what you have run down is your reserves of fuel for passion. You've emptied the barrels. You see the thread of smoke from noticing your jealousy yesterday, the night before. And where there's smoke, there is fire. So it's like, okay... There is plenty of room in me for passion. There is some fire, but by the same token, I have to realize that I've kind of emptied the barrels. I haven't let that fuel accumulate. I haven't allowed myself to fuel any passion because I made that deal with myself because I didn't want to be in that situation again. And so what you can't see in the dream is that I'm imagining is that you have you're looking ahead to the rest of your life and imagining old age as being manky and grey and scabby. I'm not sure why stray at the moment. We want to come to that. But that when you look at that image of your older age, you realise it's also blind. Turn it around that way. Rather than what can't I see, that aspect of myself is blinded, is not seeing. I'm not maybe seeing my future in the way that it would be. You know, maybe I wouldn't be the manky, grey, scabby stray in my older age. Maybe I would be as amazing as Poppy or as any other cat.
Okay. Yeah.
And there's something in the way you say to the stray cat, oh, sweetheart, you know, what other circumstances in life do we use the word sweetheart?
Well, it could be for a partner, it could be for a child, in my case, my children are grown up, but or a pet, yeah.
Mm. So all of those, but included, as you said, as a partner as well. So there's a sense there of an allusion to the possibility of a relationship. But of course, really, it's all about you. So it's acknowledging that there's a part of yourself that you maybe have banished from the home, just as you have banished passion from your inner home. This part of yourself that you've banished, that you don't want to bring home into your house, this part of yourself that is a cat on an empty barrel, this part of yourself that could draw on the fuel and have passion, you have sent it out into the streets and made it stray. And part of you in the stream wants to bring it back home, to have some of that passion back in my life, which is exactly what you've just said.
Yeah, so I guess I kind of knew what the dream was about, but you've picked out an extra aspect, which I kind of was expecting you to do, and that's this whole thing with the drums and the passion what you've been describing. So that's the bit that I kind of didn't get.
Yeah, and so, I think, you know, also you mentioning the homeless man, which was something that actually happened. Metaphorically, when we banish something from our inner kingdom, we make it homeless too. So, you know, your cat in the dream is also your homeless passion, the passion that you could otherwise have, but you are not giving it a home. And so I think in your natural, beautiful self that you are, that connects with homeless people and that sees homelessness as a bigger issue than anything else in society, is also the part of yourself that is, in seeing that homeless man, it then connected with what have I made homeless in my own life? I've made my passion homeless. So seeing him every day resonates at a deep level. What have I pushed away from myself and made and pushed out onto the streets? Oh yeah, that's it, my passion. There was a good reason, there was a very good reason from what you say, you know, a few years ago for you to say, that's it, I'm not going through that again. I do not want that passion in my life if it's going to be unfulfilled and go nowhere. I'm over that. That was a good thing to do. But, you know, the recent thing has brought up the feeling of, yeah, maybe I'm ready for some of that now, and I need to bring that stray cat home, regardless of Poppy. And I need to transform it from manky and grey and scabby and stray into something more positive.
So that's it, really. I have got, because I don't know if you've got time for, because I think we've dealt with that dream, haven't we?
We have. I'd like to do some dream alchemy with it later, but I'm curious to hear the other dream you're going to mention, so go ahead.
Yes, you know that I'm going to mention another dream, because this other dream I had many years ago, but why I would like to talk about it is because when I did your course and I realised, oh, okay, so everything we dream about is about us, there was a part of me that was quite disappointed, because I had a dream years ago that I thought was a premonition of my father's death, okay?
Yes.
So I'll tell you about it in a minute. And I've kind of coveted that dream. It's sort of like, yes, and that is my dream that I had about my dad. I foresaw his death. So that kind of made it special that I was tuned in, if you like, to him, that I foresaw that. And so when I did this course with you, I thought, oh, God, so that's not what it's about. It's not that. But then on the other hand, I have been having dreams for years about my ex-husband. And I get irritated every time. I think, I don't want to be dreaming about this guy. Why am I dreaming about him? So when I did your course, I thought, oh, great, I'm not dreaming about him. It's about an aspect of myself. So I was very relieved. You see, I thought, oh, thank goodness. I thought, what's wrong with me? I don't want to be with him. I really don't want to be with him. But anyway, so, you know, I haven't actually tried to analyze it because I haven't had one recently that I remember, but that's something I shall do. Yes. In terms of my ex-husband. But the dream about my father, shall I tell you the dream?
Yes, yes, please. Yeah.
Okay, so in this dream, we're standing on an abyss, and we're just standing there looking down. And then he does something silly. I can't remember what, like stand on one leg or something. And I say to him, don't do that. That's silly, don't do that. And he does do it, and the next thing is he falls. And he falls all the way down into the ravine or abyss. And then I'm looking at him lying motionless at the bottom. And I'm just thinking, oh, my God, he's dead. And that's the end of the dream.
Mm. And how long after that did he actually die?
Well, it's funny because I think it was a couple of months. And he was living in the Caribbean and I had to go out there. And I was sitting in one of his friend's gardens after the funeral. And then one of his friends said, yeah, I told him, I said to him, don't be so stupid, because he'd been eating too much food. He loved food. And apparently he'd been eating loads of food at this particular lunch. And then he became unwell. And then from that moment on, everything deteriorated very quickly. And he landed up in hospital. So when his friend said that, I said to him, don't be so stupid. Wham! Suddenly the dream came back to me because I hadn't remembered it until then. I said, my God, I've just remembered a dream I had about my father. And it was because I'd said the same words to him.
Yes.
So, you see, I felt this was a dream of premonition. So I kind of wanted to talk to you about that. Because you do mention somewhere that sometimes, only sometimes, people can have dreams of premonition.
Absolutely, yeah, this is really good. Sometimes people do, and, you know, sometimes the detail is so much, you know, the dream was this, so precise, and the event was this, so precise that there's, you really can't argue against it. You know, clearly, that dream was a preview of this event. They're just too similar. You know, other dreams people can say are premonitions, and they'd be along the lines of, I had a dream that I saw a plane crash, you know, and 3 years later a plane crash. So, you know, I'm being a bit obsequious here, but, you know, and linking the two things in there, and there's really nothing to connect them because lots of people dream of plane crashes. But certainly there are definitely some where this happens, and particularly, this is a tricky ground, Tanya, because particularly around death or illness, people will often notice a very accurate correlation between a dream and somebody dying, or often picking up a dreaming of someone dying at the actual time that they are and feeling there's no other way they could have known that. By the same token, dreaming of death is also very common. So we have to kind of put those two things apart and try to work out, well, which of these dreams seem like premonitions but aren't, and which of these dreams are actually premonitions. And then on top of that is the added complication, which I'm only going to go into here because of everyone listening, and that is this kind of extra note for everyone to really note very carefully, that it's very common to dream of death of people in our families and they don't die, or to dream that they're ill and they don't get sick. So, you know, before you have a dream like that and rush off and get really concerned and anxious that you've dreamt of a premonition, to actually go over, you know, apply your dream interpretation techniques. What could the dream mean in my life? Does it ring bells? Does it make sense? You know, you can still go and check up on the person, and that's always sensible. Are you feeling well? Are you doing the right things? Can I help in any way? But, you know, don't assume that every dream of death is a premonition, because it is not. But some small numbers are. Now, the other thing that I would say is I did a lot of research into premonition dreams, partly because I used to, not so much now, but used to have a lot myself as well. And so I got a lot of people involved in sending me their stories, and I did write a book on it, which was published in Australia by Random House in 1998, which was called The Shape of Things to Come, and it shares a lot of those stories. And one of the things that I noticed there was that a lot of the dreams that did turn out to be premonitions or have elements or threads of premonition in them tended to be between 2 and 10 days before the event. Yours is a bit longer than that. But yours could still have been picking up on, as you say, him eating, you know, being stupid in the way he was eating or whatever. So there is that. It really comes down to the number of correlations in the dream. And you, because you had that shivering kind of feeling when the friend in the Caribbean said, I told him don't do that. It does lean more towards the fact that you may have been picking up on him doing silly things that were actually threatening his health. How does that work? When we're asleep and the logical parts of our brain are turned off, we can sometimes kind of tune in to things that are happening in other places, particularly with people that are close with us. And you might have tuned in with his stupidity over looking after his health completely, or tuned into some other aspect of his demise. But at that same time, then I have to say, danger, danger, everybody listening into this, you know, when you dream of your ex-husband, for example, as you did, Tanya, this is not about your ex-husband. You know, maybe you were close. Maybe you're in that tiny weeny percentage that is tuning into them and finding out something about them. But on the whole, like, let's say 99.99%, this is symbolic, it's about you. So it's kind of difficult. You know, you said that you felt that the dream, you coveted the dream because it gave you... Explain that a little bit more, why you coveted the dream.
Well, I suppose I did, because I felt I must have been tuned into him, that I foresaw his death. Do you see what I mean? That it gave it some special kind of thing. But, like, when I think of what was going on in my life at the time, one of the things that was going on in my life at the time was this passion that we were talking about earlier on. And so maybe it had nothing to do with my dad. Maybe it was to do with me sort of thinking, okay, just got to knock this on the head once and for all.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense, you know, because I can understand the coveting of the dream. It's that feeling of sometimes I can accept someone's death more if I feel that I've previewed it, because it was destined, it was going to happen at that time, and that gives me some sense of comfort. Or you covet the dream because it says, I have a closeness with my father, and that feels good, that maybe he reached out and let me know. But, and you know, on one level, I'd hang on to that because that gives you a good feeling. But on the whole, I would definitely look at it symbolically. And if you hadn't said what you had just said now, I was going to say to you, let's go through this and see how it did relate to what was happening for you at the time. So, you know, the fact that you, as you say, at the beginning of the dream, there was some kind of abyss, and you must have felt at the time probably quite abysmal as well, but with this sense of, I've got all this passion and, you know, where's it going to go? It's going to go nowhere. And I should stop being silly and standing on one leg. Now, your father in your dream, everyone and everything in the dream represents something about you. So he represented some aspect of yourself that you felt was being silly. How would you describe your father's personality?
Adventurous, intelligent, caring.
How impulsive was he?
I don't think he was too impulsive. He would think things through before. I don't think he was that impulsive.
So although he was adventurous, he didn't really take risks?
No, he did, but he would think them out first. You know, he wouldn't just say, oh, that's it, I'm going to go and live in that country, because he moved around a lot, lived in different countries, but it was always well planned, you know. But when I think of what, if I move away from my father and try and think, because that's what I was doing, because I thought if there's time, because I thought that maybe my first dream might not take up the full time, I thought, okay, I'll have this dream to talk about. When I think what was going on in my life at the time, I'd reached a point of complete saturation. So there was this this passion that was going nowhere, and also I was a single parent, and I was really trying to find work because I was on benefit and I was tired of being in that situation, and I wanted to find work, and I just couldn't. I was going for interviews and nothing was working out. So I had reached a point of complete saturation with both these things in my life. And then I decided to go for counseling because I thought I'm just so frustration, I just can't bear it. So the first day I went to see the counsellor, I can remember sitting there in the chair going, I want my life to change. You know, it was very intense. and this is the weird thing. And she said, so then I drove home and we made a date for the first proper, you know, session. That was just a getting to know each other and to see if we could work together. And that very day, I got a phone call telling me that my dad was dying and that I had to get out there ASAP. And I knew then, oh my goodness, this is not what I wanted, but my life is going to change now. Because I knew that he was going to leave me money and that having money was just going to change my life, you know.
Yes.
So it was, so maybe that's, the dream was about these things, you know.
It makes sense, and you know, particularly Tanya, because you said that in the dream your father was doing something silly and you said like standing on one leg, and when you were describing there what you were going through, you were saying you were a single parent, you were trying to get work, and I was thinking that's a little bit like standing on one leg. You know, single parent, I'm on one leg. I mean, that's how you felt at the time. And a lot of single parents feel like they're on two really solid legs. But at the time, you were feeling like, I don't feel balanced here. I don't feel like I can do this. I'm on my last leg, you know. There's something that's not quite working for me. So on the one sense, exactly as you said, you were facing an abyss, whether it was about the passion that was going nowhere or whether it was about a financial abyss or a lack of
job. It was everything. It was everything, abyss. You know.
Yeah, it was absolutely everything. And when we're in those situations where there's absolutely everything, we try to take a lot of different actions, and we may judge some of them as silly even though we're just going for survival. But some part of you, as you said in the dream, said, well, don't do this. Don't be silly. And seeing the counsellor was actually a really good start for that, wasn't it?
Yeah, but the weird thing was that as soon as I went out to see my dad and everything did start to change, I completely forgot about her. I rang her to say, look, I'm going out there and I'll get in touch. And I never got in touch again because everything changed. And I didn't feel the need to have counselling.
So you were only going for counselling really to find your to find a way through to stability, to financial stability, and you didn't need that anymore?
No, it wasn't just about that. It was just, I was just saturated. I just was going around in circles trying to work out, you know, what kind of work can I get? What do I want to do? And then this other stuff with the guy. It was just, So once I wanted a sense of self-worth. I didn't feel good about being on benefit. So I really wanted a job that would make me feel good about myself. So when I came into the money, it meant I could come straight off benefit because I had too much money to be on benefit. It's not like I was inheriting loads, but I had enough to... And that meant I could just start working, and I just temped for a while I tried to work out what I was going to do. But when you're on benefit and you temp, that makes things too difficult, you know, because one week you might have work, another week you might not, then you have to keep. So I never did that at the time because I thought that is just going to be too tricky. And yes, I need that stability because of the children, the financial stability. So when I came into the money, I had the financial stability just to go and work anything, and then from there I would look for something that was more fulfilling. So that took away a lot of my frustration. And then, you know, gradually I just worked on the other frustration in my life, and that was you know, eventually, you know, I met someone else and, you know, it changed.
I love what you're saying there, and I'm also listening and thinking, you know, I think I know why that dream was, why you had your father in the dream there, because often the male in the dream, not always, but often the male in the dream will represent our outer world, our world of work, our left brain, our yang.
And yes, right.
Often that will be the stranger, the male stranger in a dream, but sometimes it will be our partner or our father. So the fact that in the dream you've got your father did fall into the ravine and he was dead, meant at the time of the dream you would have had the feeling of, in my world of work, in my outer world, in my yang, my world of work, I feel like I'm standing on one leg, I'm facing an abyss, I'm going to fall into it, it's dead, there's no job for me, my outer world is falling apart, it's going to end. You know, all of that kind of feeling.
But also, I'm just reminded of something, because when I first got divorced and came back to this country because I was abroad, it was my father who said to me, look, things are going to be tricky with you on your own, two children and the dog that I had. Why don't you go on benefit? And I was absolutely furious that he made this suggestion, because I was already doing some teaching and I had an argument with him. But then eventually I kind of saw, when I was having problems getting work to fit in with having children with the teaching, that it was tricky. So I thought, maybe he's right. Maybe this is what I should do for now, you know, because at the time it was, now it would be not so good what they were offering. So in a way, like in the dream, he kind of maybe also represented that side, that part of my life that, where I'd been on benefit, and that was going to be end. Do you see what I mean?
Yes,
and I was
going
to enter the world of work. I just suddenly thought of that while we were talking.
Yes, yeah, that makes sense as well. It's really interesting to look at dreams from a long time ago and see them in hindsight, isn't it? With things that are difficult to see at the time.
Because actually now I think, that's okay. I don't need to think of that dream as a premonition. I'm okay with this new interpretation of it, you know, because... Yeah, I am. So that's good.
that's really good. I would love you to do some dream alchemy on the recent dream about the cat.
Right.
Now, you have said that you would like to have at least one last passionate affair before you become a manky old grey scabby stray late old lady.
Yeah, well, I would like to have something long term, you
of
know,
course,
and okay,
yeah,
the passion might not go on forever, but it would be nice to have some of it initially.
And even, you know, even whether or not you have passion that lasts long term, you do need fuel for a relationship. So, you know, whether you burn that fuel all up in one passionate blast, or whether you let a bit of it out as passion and then you've got a lot of fuel to energize it on a long term, the point is at the moment that in your dream you see that those barrels as empty, and you see a part of yourself in the future as being manky, grey, scabby and stray, just to sort of make it ultra dramatic, you know. So I think the dream alchemy there would be around the idea of going for the walk again and seeing the cat sitting on a barrel, but it's a full barrel of oil. It's not going to explode or anything. It's just, you're like, oh, that could be useful for something. And the cat is the opposite. So the opposite of manky is what?
Oh, healthy looking, loved, cared for, you know, lovely fur, eyes wide open, engaging with me, you know, because it wasn't able to engage with me because it couldn't see me.
Yes.
So I would be going up to it and stroking it and it would be responding.
Yes. And as you pick it up, it might actually have a human voice and say something like, you know, you should try me with Poppy because you might be surprised. And then you continue the visualization by taking her home, you know, because you don't have to do this in real life. And and Poppy is equally engaged with this healthy, beautiful cat so that it's okay to bring her into your home space. So what you would be doing from that, and as with dream alchemy, you need to bring in a transformed emotion too. So rather than the feeling of stray and manky and old, you want to summon up an emotion of youthful and energetic, because, hey, you've got all that fuel to draw on, youthful, energetic, healthy, loved kind of feeling, embraced, as you say, engaged. You've already done it in saying engaged, their eyes wide open, to bring all these feelings into that visualization, if you do it as a visualization. So exactly what you said, you know, reimagine yourself in the dream, but going down the road, and this is this most beautiful, healthy, well cared for, loved, beautiful fur, energized, eyes wide open, cat sitting on this barrel of full of oil, and I'm just going to walk up and I'm going to lift him up into my arms, him or her, whichever feels right, and she's going to say to me, just take me home, because I think you'll find that Poppy and I are going to get on really well together. And you walk home and you have an amazing feeling in your heart, because instead of your heart going out to her in pity, she is actually helping to warm your heart as well. So to do that dream alchemy, the point of that being to transform your vision of, oh my goodness, as I get older, I'm going to just, it's all going to be downhill from now. I'm going to be manky, because you used the word manky earlier on when describing getting older. It's transforming that so that you have a more consciously and unconsciously, a more positive view of your health and vitality as you get older, so that enables you to free yourself from that previous promise to yourself not to have that amount of passion again. It enables you to have that, whether it's going to fuel a short-term relationship or a long-term relationship, because you're going to be well-fueled and healthy and happy, and you're not seeing turning 60 or being 60 as a last ditch. In fact, it could be the beginning of several decades of wonderful health and well-being.
That would be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
How does that feel?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
So this is all about, you know, whether or not the homeless man and the homeless issues are part of this. This is all about creating a new sense of home. You've already have a lovely home, and you're already in it in a lovely bed with your cat talking to us. But this is a sense of really fueling up every other aspect of your feelings of what is home to me, Tanya. What is my inner home? Am I completely and comfortably there? Is it well fueled? Is the hearth fire burning in my own heart? Do I have passion for my own life?
Yeah. Okay. So where is this guy?
Well,
that's another.
The magic is that when you get it right in your inner world, the outer world corresponds. So, you know, at some level, there is some part of yourself that is maybe signaling, unconsciously signaling out there, oh, don't bother getting involved with me, because I haven't got any passion, I haven't got any fuel, and anyway, I'm going to be a manky, grey, scabby old thing before too long. And that's your unconscious mind trying to protect you from the passion that you had before that didn't get anywhere. And that may just be signaled by your unconscious mind. It may be subtly signaled, have been subtly signaled by the way that you respond in life, you know, not maybe responding to overtures that are made because you haven't wanted to go there until now. You suddenly realize that you do. So it's when you get this, the home fire's burning within, and you feel comfortable within yourself that you do have the fuel, and that you're not about to go down a ravine of older age, that you have actually got, you know, potential and health ahead of you. Then once you get comfortable with all of that, and you keep going with this dream alchemy of inviting this beautiful, engaging cat home and giving it space within yourself, within your home, then you begin to not, your unconscious mind is changed and shifted, so it doesn't put the same signals out there, and you subtly change the signals that you put out there too, because you feel confident that you've got plenty of energy to draw upon to share with someone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, time will tell.
Time will tell. Yes.
Time will tell, yes.
So as we're, if you're going to do this as a dream alchemy visualization, do it 20 or 30 times a day for a couple of weeks. Really give it some oomph. And really feel it in your heart, like as if this is putting the heart, you know, my heart fire's burning for myself and for this lovely cat to stretch itself as cats only know how in front of a roaring fire inside a home and have that feeling so that, like, you're doing that too. And time will tell, and tell us, tell me, let me know what happens. I want to know.
Okay, it's a deal.
It's a deal. Thanks. Thank you for bringing both of those dreams and your lovely and bright and very engaging conversation. And I don't think I or anybody listening could possibly imagine that you would be going manky and downhill after the age of 60. You sound brilliant.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jane Therese. I'm so glad to have been on your show.
Thanks, Tanya. It was lovely having you.
Okay. Bye.
I'm sure that you enjoyed both of those dreams. And, you know, while we usually only do one dream in the dream show, those two kind of really work together very well. And I think the thought that I'd like to leave you with here is the importance of doing your dream alchemy. You know, you can interpret a dream and understand how it relates to your life. And that goes a long way to making a change in your life. When you become aware, particularly of your unconscious mind or aware of the dynamics that are happening in your life, it can cause you to step out and change things and perceive things differently and act differently and create positive change in your life. But by the same token, sometimes our unconscious mind is so strong that it really does take the work of doing the dream alchemy to reprogram those limiting beliefs or reprogram those feelings that we've got that really shift and change things for us. And in the case of a visualization, the dream alchemy visualization really does need you to do it 20 to 30 times a day for a couple of weeks to really get in there. And it's so worth doing because it totally changes everything in a really positive way. So this is me encouraging you, no matter what level, whether you've only just started interpreting the dreams or whether you've been doing it for a long time, to make sure that, not for every dream, but when you have a really key dream, to really sit down, create the right dream alchemy for it, and definitely do it. Take action by doing your dream alchemy, and that's where you see the differences in your life. Thank you for listening to yet another episode of The Dream Show. The next episode, episode 224, is due out on the 5th of December 2019, if you're listening to this in real time. Have a wonderful month. I'm Jane Theresa Anderson.